thank you all for coming. This is awesome. I was not expecting this many. Song class of 2002, so it's been about 15 years. This is actually my first time really being back here. Like Christy said, I have, over the last year or two, maybe had a couple of conversations with some individual students. Actually bumped into some students at an industry conference in Boston about a year ago. And that was the first time that I really started thinking, you know what, maybe it's time for me to start giving back a little bit and giving some of my time. The main reason why I wanted to do this is because at the time that I was a student, let's put it this way. How many of you think you have a good idea of what you want to do with your career in life after you leave here? Okay, good. I was expecting more hands, and I was going to tell you have no idea. because I was in a position where I actually did think I had a good idea of what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a journalist, specifically a sports writer. During my time, I was one of the first editors of the Daily Gazette, which I am incredibly proud to see is still not only in existence, but thriving in a real institution on campus. At the time, the Daily Gazette was an email that I sent out from my dorm room before going to sleep at night. It was just text only in the body of an email. And we had no idea at the time how kind of ahead of its time it was in terms of it being, you know, maybe 5-7 years before the rise of blogs and social media and shorter forms of journalism. But anyway, I thought I wanted to be a journalist and was totally going down that road. I was, again, this was before blogs, so the path to being a journalist back then was you get an internship at a newspaper, cover obituaries and whatever, you know, maybe high school sports, whatever the more established journalists didn't want to, write about. And maybe in 20 or 25 years, if you played your cards right, they'd give you a column and let you actually write your opinions about things. I think if I was maybe 5 years younger, I might have stayed down that path because, you know, by the time 2007, 2008 rolled around, there were more blogs and websites and social media started becoming a thing. Now you can just start up a Twitter account and kind of do the job and be a journalist. You can start up a blog on Medium. You can post things wherever. There weren't those same avenues back then. So long story short, literally April of my senior year, I decided I didn't want to be a journalist anymore. And said, well, crap, now what am I going to do? And I went through the alumni directory just looking for advice and looking for anyone who was remotely connected to the worlds of media, communications, marketing, you name it. And I found about 8 names of people and just reached out to them cold and asked them if they'd be willing to spend 15 minutes talking to me and giving me some advice. And it just so happened that one of those people, who I never knew because she was about 5 or 6 years older than me, she happened to work in the PR department at the U.S. Tennis Association in New York. They're the national governing body for tennis, and they own and operate the U.S. Open in the fall. And at the time that I happened to reach out, they happened to need one more intern for that summer in the PR department, and she was at least able to get me in the door for an interview, and I got that internship. It was supposed to last 3 months, and 15 years later, here I am. Looking back on it now, and really the crux of why I wanted to come here, I remember feeling at the time, and I don't know how much of this was reality and how much of it was my own perception or insecurities or whatever, but I remember feeling as a student here that if I didn't want to either stay in academia and become a college professor or become an investment banker or a lawyer or go off and join the Peace Corps and save the world, that was somehow frowned upon, that you had to kind of go down one of those paths. And if you wanted to do anything, you know, quote unquote, regular, normal, or out there, or working in the corporate world in a non-investment banking or law setting, or if you just wanted to do something fun and interesting that was frowned upon, like that you weren't contributing enough to society or whatever. And that combined with not feeling like there was enough of an alumni network to help give me advice for that. So all of that has been swirling around in my head for the last year or two, ever since I encountered those couple of students at an industry conference, and I think one or two reached out to me separately, just finding me on LinkedIn or whatever. And so I just got to talking to people and got connected with Christy eventually, and said, you know what, I want to be one of those people who makes students realize, I figured there have to be some people now who are students who feel the way that I felt at the time. And so here I am. So going back to my path, like I said, I started at the USTA that summer. It was supposed to be a 3-month internship. It was in the PR department, which, the communications field, I guess, can mean a couple, a lot of different things depending on where you're working and what they're doing. In my experience at the USTA, it was a lot of getting ready for the US Open. It was a lot of dealing with the media. Reporters from around the world come to cover the US Open. And so we would, it was kind of a dual role. On the one hand, you're reacting to questions that they might have and information that they might want. And so you're fulfilling those requests. On the other hand, you kind of want to proactively pitch them stories or suggest things that they might not be thinking about to write about and cover. And then separately from the US Open, again, they're the governing body for the sport, so they're charged with growing tennis nationwide. And so we would work on community programs around the country, tennis programs in the parks and whatnot. And it would be my job to, find the local reporter in town X and pitch them a story about something interesting the USTA was doing. And it was all fine and good, and I enjoyed it for the time, and I got a lot of experience and learned a lot. But I also wasn't somebody who wanted tennis to be my life. I was more interested in the communications field more broadly in the sports industry. Also, their office was up in White Plains in Westchester County, and it's a fine place to live, but when you're 24 or 25 and you're 45 minutes away from Manhattan, you kind of want to be in the mix and be doing more. But the main reason for me wanting to move on was the US Open was this amazing, awesome event where journalists from around the world would come, and I was able to form relationships with people, and that's really the lifeblood of what you do as a communications person, is forming relationships with reporters, with others in the business. So I was doing that, and then the US Open would end, and there'd be 11 other months in the year, and there wouldn't be as much that I would have to share with them. So I felt like I wasn't growing as much as I'd like to as a professional in this business. So I was fortunate to get a job at a PR agency, a communications firm called Edelman. They actually happen to be the largest in the world, and their New York office had hundreds of people. And so I was there for about 2 years. And there, the way a communications firm works is other companies will hire the firm to basically supplement their own communications efforts. So every company and entity, they might have a staff communications person, but that one person, or even if they have a larger team, might not be fully equipped to do everything that they need to do. So instead of, your choice basically is, okay, we can hire 20 people ourselves and put them on staff and pay them benefits and everything, or we could take much less money and hire a firm and just bring them in for the 3 months we need or for a specific time period. So that was where I worked. And that was great because in a very short period of time, I was able to get a lot of experience working on all sorts of different things. So, I would have it's almost like you get to work at 10 different companies all at once based on who your clients are. So within 2 years of working there, and again, at the time I was very focused on the sports industry and the business of sports. So every client that I had was in that world. and I pretty much got to do something involving every major sport at some point or another, either working for the sport itself or maybe a team, or more often a company that sponsored that team. If you watch sports, you see there's sponsors all over the place. And so in that short time, in 2 years, I went to 2 Super Bowls. I did the Olympics in Beijing back in 2008, which was awesome. And I also worked on probably one of my favorite projects was I worked on the opening of Prudential Center, the arena in Newark, New Jersey, where the Devils play. And that was interesting because it wasn't really about sports at all. It was about what it meant for the city of Newark to open this facility. And Cory Booker, who's now a famous senator, at the time was the mayor of Newark, and we did a whole lot of press conferences with him, where he would talk about the arena as kind of the linchpin to the revitalization of Newark, which didn't really wind up happening. It never happens like they think it's going to. They always think that if they just build an arena, that all these bars and restaurants and hotels will prop up around it, and tourists will flood in from everywhere, and it never really happens like that. But anyway, so I worked on that, and I was very happy there and learned a lot. And I would have stayed there probably much longer, except I came back from Beijing, and someone who I had previously worked with at the USTA let me know that they were looking for someone at Major League Baseball who did exactly what my specialty was growing to be at the time. And I was able to get in for an interview there and got that job. So for 7 years, I was the director of business communications and public relations for Major League Baseball for the league office. And when I say business public relations, again, that means I was focused on the business side, which meant there. In the sports industry, there are kind of two sides to communications and PR. There's the on-field side, which is there are, obviously there are media that are kind of built in that will come and cover, major sporting events. So if you go to a Phillies game, there's all those journalists who are sitting in the press box and they're writing their game stories for that night. And so someone has to work for the team to support their efforts. So they're the sports writers, they're already coming to the games, so you need to answer their questions, you need to provide them with stats and game notes, you need to give them information about players, you need to tell them when the manager is going to be available and coordinate those interviews and things like that. That's a very important job. It was never what I wanted to do. What I was more interested in was kind of the other side of the coin of communications within the sports industry, which was more on the corporate side. And from a media relations standpoint, it meant being a little more proactive. So we were always targeting the media that weren't automatically coming to games. So outside of the sports section. So anytime someone who happened to write in the business section or entertainment or something like that wanted to write about baseball, we would be the ones to deal with it. We did a lot of proactive outreach for things like morning shows and late night shows and magazines and things like that. Baseball still, but especially at that time, really was having an issue where as strong as the business was and remains, they were kind of falling behind the NFL and NBA in terms of cultural cachet and star power. I mean, if you think about the biggest athletes in the world right now, it's LeBron and Tom Brady and it's not really baseball players. And a lot of that is because the sport has just gotten very, very local. So you could be a huge baseball fan, but you're really just paying attention to your team. And then as soon as the season ends, you kind of lose interest. And so, we just had an awesome World Series, but it wasn't an automatic that if you were a baseball fan, you were watching it. Maybe if your team wasn't in it, you would kind of lose interest. So that did not used to be the case. But anyway, it became my job to try and help make some of those players bigger stars on the national stage. So if the individual teams weren't really doing that, and so if anybody was going to get a player profiled in a GQ or booked on Jimmy Fallon or something like that, it was probably one of the people, and it was me or someone in my department, because we felt like it was our responsibility to grow the game on a national level. So we did things like that. And then the most recent piece of my career has actually been transitioning a little bit away from the sports industry. As much fun as it is and as interesting as it is, I reached a point a couple of years ago where I wanted to be a little bit more well-rounded and felt like as great as the sports industry is, there's kind of you can kind of get pigeonholed, and it can, if you do it too long, it becomes the only thing that you're associated with. So I'm working now at a company called Finsbury, which is a communications firm, similar to Edelman, but very different. They have a specialty in not so much. I mean, there's a term called crisis communications, which is helping companies deal with, crises, very tough situations where they're in trouble for some reason or another. It's some of that, but we prefer to think about it more as issues and reputation management. So we work with companies not just in the midst of when they're in a crisis, but a lot of times before. The truly smart companies hire a firm like ours well before they have a crisis situation, so that they are prepared for it when it happens. I was just telling someone before, I'm just old enough that when I started my career in this business, because of the way that the media landscape was, if there you'd wake up in the morning and there'd be a bad story in the paper about your company, and that would suck, but we would have all day to sit around and gather the lawyers and the business people and strategize, okay, how are we going to get a better story in tomorrow's paper? And maybe if it was a really, really big deal, maybe you'd get a phone call from a TV outlet looking for a comment in time for the 5 o'clock news that night. But for the most part, you had that entire day. And now you basically have 10 or 15 minutes before something that someone has posted to Twitter becomes conventional wisdom and is spread around everywhere. So you don't have that time to sit around and talk. And if you look at all of the situations where companies and individuals get themselves in trouble, very, very often it is made worse by their reaction to it and how they handle the situation. Very often the fallout and how they handle a situation turns something into something worse than what the original, situation was. And if they just quote unquote had their act together and had the right thing to say right away, doesn't make it go away entirely, but it helps a great deal. And so that's a lot of what I do now. So I have multiple clients. Some of them are within the sports industry still, because based on my background, whatever clients we have that touch the sports world, I'm going to work on them, because there's really just myself and my boss, basically, who have any experience in the sports industry. But even within that, there's still issues and things like that. There's still the Finsbury style of clients. We're not, there's some of the things that I've done in the past that are just more focused either on the field or just about reaching consumers. It's not really what we do. We're more behind the scenes, reputation. Perfect example. Any of you guys basketball fans? NBA? Yeah. So we represent the NBA Players Association, the union that represents the players. Just about a year ago at this time, they were finalizing negotiations with the league on a new collective bargaining agreement, the document that basically governs all the rules and regulations about basically everything about the sport, how players are compensated, scheduling, rules, drug testing, you name it. And our firm worked with the Players Association behind the scenes during the negotiation process, and we helped them with strategy. We helped them think through what positions they were going to fight for and not fight for, and how it might play out in the press, and we did a lot of basically planning for the worst case scenario, which would have been an actual work stoppage. If they were not able to reach an agreement, then the owners would have locked out the players, and it would have been a huge ordeal. And so we were preparing for that possibility all the while, hoping that it didn't happen because nobody wants a work stoppage. But believe me, we were prepared. We were ready to go to war if we had to. But that's the kind of thing that people like us do. But then, like I said, being at this firm, I've been able to kind of branch out and work on things that have nothing to do with sports. And what has been most interesting to me are kind of two things. One, for a while there, I felt like the experience that I had in the sports industry was very specific and could only be applied there. And what I realize now is just how transferable a lot of those skills and abilities are to really any industry. It certainly helps to have a high level of knowledge about a specific industry, but once you learn the core principles of communications, which, by the way, you all know a lot of them already. You learn them in maybe fourth grade when they talk to you about the six steps of problem solving. It really isn't much more elaborate than that. But you can really apply those principles to anything. So even though my experience is in the sports industry, I can join a meeting on something involving a client in the automotive industry or the banking industry or healthcare or whatever, and it's still, okay, what's the problem? What's the situation? Who are the key audiences? Who are we trying to reach? What message are we trying to send? What's the best way to reach them? Let's hash it out. What's the story we want to tell? And all of that, still applies to whatever it is. And then the other piece that I've learned in the last couple of years is that communications itself can mean so much more than just working with media. Early in my career, the jobs I happened to have, the priority was media relations. It was pitching stories to reporters and trying to place stories. And that's still a part of my job, but it's maybe 10 or 20% of my job. Much more of what I do now is behind the scenes strategy. And the media is very, very important, but it's not the only means we have now to communicate with key audiences. So depending on who you're trying to reach, media might not be the way to go. Sometimes I have a client where their most important audience and the reason why they're paying us is to communicate better with their own employees. And so we've developed a whole internal communications program for them. I'm certain that that's a priority here at the college. I mean, Swarthmore has a communications department, and some of their time they spend talking to the Philly Inquirer and the New York Times and whoever might want to write something about the school. But they spend just as much time, I'm sure, crafting speeches for the president and sending out emails to students. If there's some new thing that they're instituting on campus, they have to figure out how to best position that to you guys. Just going back, it just reminded me of something else I wanted to share with you guys. So during my time here as a student and as a student journalist, I would say the kind of crowning achievement of my time as a student journalist and the thing that also I would say put the Daily Gazette on the map for real was I was here for the school's decision to eliminate the football program. That was in the fall of 2000, I think. And that was a real, and you guys can imagine what a big deal that was. It actually was on the front page of the New York Times, like not the sports section, the actual New York Times on the front page, because at the time it was one of, I think, the 10 oldest football programs in the country. And it became kind of a flashpoint in this larger debate about the relative merits of academics versus athletics and the trade-offs that schools make in order to do this. The quick history of that was about 2 or 3 years earlier, The football team had had an epic losing streak. Like, I think they went two or three straight years without winning a single game. It was insane. And they made the decision, all right, let's see what happened. What would we have to do? What would we have to invest in the football program in order to get it to be respectable? And they did. And they took a shot. They started making it more of a priority in admissions. They brought in a real coach, who knew what he was doing. They staffed up, and they got to, I think that last year they were maybe 5-5, which still, I mean, it's D3. It's they're playing Johns Hopkins, but still, it was a big deal to even be 5-5. But they just decided that it was too much of a drain on admissions. I mean, I knew the guys. They were great guys, and they were smart, and they deserved to be Swarthmore students. But when you actually start doing the math and you look at, okay, what's the average class size? 350, something like that. So 50-50, that's 175, men. And so out of that, in order to field a respectable football team, you needed to admit about 20 or so kids every year who had football as a priority. So, more than 10, 15% of the male student body had to, had to be football players. It just, it became too hard for them to find the 20 Swarthmore students out there, around the world who also could be football players. But as you can imagine, it caused quite an uproar, and it wasn't just, it wasn't a matter of, okay, we've eliminated the football program, sorry, it's over. Because we're Swarthmore, it set off a week of gatherings and Quaker meetings and candlelight vigils and all sorts of events where the president and everybody had to be dragged out to, to take questions and give everyone, the opportunity to talk about their feelings about it and everything. But for me, just being a student journalist, it was awesome because there I am at these events, standing alongside. I mean, there were news vans with the satellite, poles up. Again, reporter from the New York Times. And there I was at the same press conference with them, asking questions of the same people. And again, selfishly, because of what I was doing compared to the Phoenix, they had to get an emergency budget to print a special issue midweek. They printed it on regular paper. And there I was, just like I always had been, just back in my dorm room every single night, churning out stories. So it really became a thing that put the Daily Gazette on the map in terms of a source of actual news in a timely fashion, which again, we didn't realize at the time, that we were onto something in terms of the larger shifts in the media landscape. So that's basically my career path. I guess if I would impart any kind of advice to you guys, it would be a couple of things. Most importantly, try not to put too much pressure on yourselves right now to figure out what you want to do with yourselves. I never would have imagined that I'd wind up doing anything like what I'm doing now, at the time. It is totally and completely okay to not have the right job right when you leave school. It's okay to not really have a clear path 5 years after you're out of school. Like, it is okay. You will also probably change your mind multiple times about what you think you want to do. You might have an idea of what you think is your dream job, and either you might actually get it and then realize once you have it, it's not all it was cracked up to be, and you change course, or you could get to a place that you think is the be all end all and maybe not get there at the right time or not be in the right position. It changes and it takes time, and it is totally okay for you to not really have a clear sense of what you want to do just yet. That is really the main thing. And I was talking to somebody about this just last week. Again, like I said at the outset, I don't know if it's still the vibe here, but I definitely remember feeling like the kinds of things that I was interested in were, frowned upon, or I was looked down on for not, maybe contributing enough to society, or or that the things that I wanted to do weren't as meaningful, quote unquote. I would say the world needs more people who are as smart as you guys are in the kinds of fields like I'm in. Because, if you think about even what I do for a living right now, corporate crisis communications, the perception might be like, oh, so all you do is help evil corporations, skate out of trouble when they do bad things. So no, actually what we do is we help them move past those bad things and get better and do a better job in the future and communicate the steps that they've taken to be, better citizens. And so if you think about it, if the only people who do what I do are bad, evil, soulless corporate types, then they're the ones who keep winning, So there are nonprofits out there that need smart marketers and communications people. There are government organizations and non-government organizations that do really good work in the world and really contribute to society, and they need people who understand the media and can work with reporters and help place stories. There are political campaigns that I mean, think about, I'm sure you guys have all closely followed everything that's been going on in the last 2 years. Think about how often you've heard talk about, oh, only, Hillary had a better message or a stronger, this or that. Like, that's what I do. We work on messaging and help people. You hear people talk about, oh, they weren't able to break through and they weren't able to break through the clutter and the media are focused on this instead of that. All of that is what I do. We help try and influence what people are focusing on. We help try and influence what the message is when they're out there talking about themselves and communicating with people. And again, so the world needs more people who are doing that while also having a good heart about it in order for us to win against those who would do those same things and use those skills for evil.